Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Learn to Love podcast, your guide to everything love, sex, intimacy, and relationships. Each week, your host, Zach Beach, interviews new experts on love, including couples therapists, relationship coaches, sex educators, and best-selling authors. Learn the best tips and cutting-edge wisdom to better love yourself, others, and the world. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show.
Hello, beautiful souls. I'm so positively delighted that you could join us on the Learn to Love podcast. I am your host, Zach Beach, and I'm excited to introduce our guest for today's episode, Kelly Miller. Kelly Miller is a psychotherapist, best-selling author, and radio host. She is the award-winning and best-selling author of Thriving with ADHD. Kelly was a co-host on LA Talk Radio with over 1 million listeners, which included over 250 guest celebrities and authors, and she was an expert radio personality for Sirius XM Radio. She was a relationship host on Balance by Nature TV and is currently a writer and relationship host for wikihow.com. She came on to the show to talk about her newest book, Love Hacks: Simple Solutions to Your Most Common Relationship Issues. So without further ado, let's begin. Hello, Kelly. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
How are you today?
I'm excited to be here. I feel giddy.
Oh, good. I'm excited that you're here too. I'm excited to hack our love today.
Yes.
Before we get into that, I just would love to hear a little bit more about you. So you have a ton of experience working with couples. You've been in the field for 20 years now, and you've written that it's harder now for couples to work together than it was even a decade ago. So why is that?
You know, for me, it's clearly technology. I mean, I think technology, it gives us a lot of benefits, but it also creates a ton of distractions. And I think we are just not as present with our partners. So really, if you think about it, how can we build that human connection with our partner if we're always on technology and we're taking away from each other? So to me, that's why it's harder. Priorities are a little bit off and things like that. So that's why, to me, it's so important that we carve out that time with our partner because of all these distractions. So we need to put in more effort to have that quality time.
It's true. It's such a paradox that this technology, in theory, connects us to anyone in the world. But in practice, it simply creates more disconnection.
You're spot on.
So I heard you say we need to carve out time. And I am curious, if technology is one of the biggest things getting in the way of connection with my partner, how do we take it out of the equation?
Yes. I think we need to set structure and boundaries around technology. So, you know, at the dinner time, I tell people, put your phones away. Now that is the time for you and your partner and nothing else. So just create a no phone zone. Or, you know, after dinner, if that's your time to be together, commit to, okay, we're not going to be on our phones. And it doesn't have to be so long. I mean, I think people get really nervous when I say that. I mean, even if it's a half hour or it's an hour, it's really just creating that special time between the two of you. Because if you think about it, it's like this like annoying little kid, like beep, beep, you know, and when you're with your partner and it's like, you know, and so it's like, you can't help it. And those dings and those beeps create dopamine. So it's really hard to get rid of it, but we need to start over with our partners again and put that aside.
Or sometimes what comes up for me is I might be having an intention to not be on technology when I'm with somebody, but then mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, what was the name of that movie? What was the name of that restaurant that we went to? Yeah, uh-huh. And it's so tempting to want to look it up. Like, we're so used to, it's almost like an external brain sometimes. Like,
yes.
I think part of the reason we're so dependent on technology is because we've almost outsourced certain functioning.
It's so true. When I have Alexa and I'll ask her things all the time. And then like when I don't have her and I'm like at a hotel and I'm like, oh, I don't even have my Alexa. I mean, you do. You become so dependent on it. I mean, remember back in the day, I'd have to look up in the encyclopedia. Now today's a lot different.
Do you think there's a way to use technology to cultivate connection? Like to use this tool that we have in a different or better way?
Sure. I mean, if you're in a long distance relationship, I think it can be super beneficial. You can connect via Zoom or Skype or something like that. And even just, you know, texting throughout the day with your partner is really lovely if you're not together. So, right, it's not you know, it doesn't create this evil, but I think what happens is it's just when we're together, I think it creates an issue. So when you're apart, I think we can use it to our benefit.
Ah, I see. When you're already in a physical space.
Exactly. You don't need it. Right.
Out of curiosity, I'm wondering if you have experienced sort of a greater level of, you might call it emotional cheating that can happen via technology. In other words, we are physically with our partners, maybe living with them, but there's a little bit more messages going on with other partners or potential partners or ex-partners than before.
Oh, 100%. It's so true. And I think there always is that fine line of, right, what is cheating and things like that. And I mean, I think it can get sticky, right? We are connected with so many people from our past or so many future people, or now we're following people on Instagram and, ooh, it'd be kind of innocent to reach out to this person and things like that. So I do think it creates a lot of those temptations. And so what I say is, you know, avoid that the best you can so you don't get tempted, right? Don't reach out to people from your past if you know that there is going to create that little bit of fire and kind of excitement. It's like, okay, that's your signal that this probably isn't a great idea, because it's only going to take you farther away from your partner. That's really the takeaway from that. So if you're missing that connection and you're tempted to reach out, it's time to look inward and say, ooh, okay, I need to reconnect with my partner and somebody else isn't going to give me that. I think we kind of reach elsewhere where we're not getting it within our relationship. So it's just that signal, okay, I need to kick it up and spice things up with my partner. I need to do more adrenaline fun activities. Let's go to a theme park. Let's go rock climbing. Let's do something different to create that newness and excitement that we're missing.
Tell me more about that. Why, just a softball question kind of, but why do I want to do new and exciting things with my partner? It's nice to sit at home and watch television.
Sure. Right. Exactly. Which has its place too, right? Which is fun. But, you know, I think sometimes we take our partner for granted, or we just get used to just watching Netflix and you forget the beginning of dating when you did all that fun and new stuff. And so that's why, you know, these other temptations may look exciting. So we have to recreate that a little bit. And they've done studies to show that those adrenaline seeking activities can make you feel closer to your partner. So we want to do that. And again, that newness that creates new memories, it creates new experiences, and it makes you feel excited again about your partner. I'm all for it.
It is true. I often think about how our minds are habituation machines. And this is normal, like to maintain homeostasis. Once you learn a language, it becomes natural. But when that same habituation applies to our partners, how easily we take them for granted.
That's so true. And we get lazy. I mean, that's the truth, right? I'm tired. I don't have to, you know, I don't have to do much. I don't have to dress. Oh, I'm not going to wear makeup today. Oh, my partner knows what I look like. You know, I mean, all of that. And I mean, of course, some of that is just natural, but I think we do need to continue to make that effort in our relationship for sure.
So date nights.
They're key. I mean, yeah, when I am a big proponent of date nights, and I think couples need to schedule them. And what I say to my couples is, 1 week, one person plans it, and the next week, the other person plans it. So, you know, there's that element of surprise. You don't know what, you know, you're kind of getting. And then the pressure's not on one person to plan it. And so it'll be a really good experience. And so for the type A who kind of wants to plan all the time, they've got to sit back and kind of see what that's like and being taken care of, and vice versa. And then, you know, the other person can get surprised by something new, exciting, and, oh, what are we doing this time? And what's this going to be like? So I love date nights. And it doesn't have to be a long, prolonged activity. It could be a few hours and you don't have to spend a lot of money. I mean, some of the date nights, you know, you could take a walk around the neighborhood. You could set up a picnic in the park. It doesn't have to be, you know, you could volunteer if you'd like. I mean, it really doesn't have to be an expensive ordeal.
So interesting that you said that technology is getting in the way of relationships and that you have your book with a technology-related word, love hacks.
Oh, that's very true. I didn't even think about that. You're right.
But how are you using this term hack, the title of your book?
To me, it's synonymous with tools, solutions. I think it was just a catchy term that I really liked, right? But no, I mean, the reason I wrote Love Hacks is really simple. There were so many couples that were coming to my office and presenting the same issues over and over again. Issues with intimacy, things are different after we've had kids. My partner, you know, doesn't recognize how many chores I do. I mean, it was kind of like the same issues. And I thought, wow, what about the couples who aren't coming into my office or can't do therapy because of finances or are afraid to do therapy? Let me create a simple solution to the most common relationship issues and provide those solutions for couples. And so that's where the hacks came in. It's like, let me make it simple for you. Let me break it down.
I love that. Simple solutions to common relationship problems. And it is a wonderful book. You have 15 chapters covering 15 issues, such as my partner doesn't listen to me. We don't make time for each other. We don't have sex anymore. I'm sure some listeners like, oh, that's me.
Oh, that's me. Exactly. Yes.
But my question to you is, many of these questions start out with we, and it almost implies that both partners are coming into therapy on the same page with a very well-defined problem that they are trying to target. And I am curious how, if there's work that needs to be done to get to that point, because I feel like often it's like, well, if my partner's clearly the problem, they're reckless with money, they're refusing all my sexual advances, how do couples get on the same page? Or what's a good way to get on the same page?
You're right. It was a very insightful perception on your part of noticing that, because you're right. They don't come in and they're like, you know, we've been thinking about it. And it's usually the pointing of the fingers. They are doing this, right? My partner isn't doing this. And so I, you know, the first thing I always say to couples is like, we can only change ourselves. I mean, that's the truth. We want to come in, we want to fix our partner, but we really can only do our part. But the reason I wrote we is kind of a nicer term of like, you know, either partner is feeling that way is kind of what I wanted to say. But you're absolutely right that, you know, it doesn't typically start off on the same page, but I want it to end on the same page where I want there to be accountability and I want there to be this buy-in of like, okay, if we work better together, everybody's going to be happier, right? We're going to be a better couple. It's no longer who's winning in this individual competition. It's like, no, we're going to be the best couple we can be. And so it's really, you know, teaching couples that they are a unit. They are a team. And in order for this relationship to get better, they have to work together as a team. And that takes effort on both parts.
Kind of a side question. Essentially, like when a couple does walk into your office, what do you see? What I mean by that is I remember reading a book with Stan Tatkin, who has a very kind of like neuroscience-based approach. And he was like, I see two nervous systems interacting with each other.
Right.
But I've also heard, you know, some couples therapists say, I see three entities, like two people and then a couple as a separate thing. So when a couple walks into your office, what do you see and what are you looking for?
Ooh, that is such a good question. I think the first thing I notice is where they sit on my couch, right? And I mean, it sounds basic, but it's very telling. You know, if you have couples who are completely on opposite ends of the couch, they're not touching. I mean, you know, I'm in for it, right? Versus who couples who come in and they're very close and they're even sometimes holding hands. It's like, so to me, that's kind of the first thing that just kind of pops in my head. And then you're right. I do kind of pick up like, how is each one feeling today? Are they agitated already when they walk in the door, which often happens? Or, you know, is one person really angry? So I kind of just pick up on the feelings, I think, first and foremost. And then, yeah, because, you know, you can tell a lot from that nonverbal communication too, right? The angry face, because sometimes it's hard for people to express it, but you can tell a lot just by the facial features and the steam coming out of the head when they're angry. Yes. But I like that question. It's really, really interesting.
I want to go back to something you said earlier that we can only change ourselves. And how do we take that approach into our relationships? Because I can also see how potentially that might turn into like self-blame.
Sure.
Like something's wrong with me, which is why something is wrong with my relationship.
Okay. Well, the way I see it is almost the opposite is if I can change my behavior, you know, positive behavior begets positive behavior. So if your partner's seeing that you're being accountable, that you're being kinder, almost by default, they start doing that. So that's sort of how I see it. Maybe I'm an optimist, but but yeah, that like, you know, if we kind of see our partners changing and they're, I mean, always like, right, if people are kinder to us, we naturally are just going to be kinder. If we're stonewalling our partner, then they're going to get angry. So it just starts with us and recognizing, right? And recognizing, you know, what you put out, you're going to get back and in some capacity. And so that's why, you know, there is that individual component, I think, in my book of how we really need to start with us.
And what would you say to like a partner who's like, ah, if they would just change,
right,
all of our relationship problems would be solved. If they were just this way.
I hear it all the time. And I said, well, what would it be like for you? Where, you know, what do you feel that you need to change? So I bring it back to them. What can you be accountable for, right? Because that is what happens. They come in, they are so hell-bent on what their partner is doing wrong. And then I always say, okay, let's talk about each of your parts, what you need to work on. And they're like, oh, I don't want to look at my part. I want to tell you about hers or his, right? But there's always a part. And I always hear, oh, you know, I could not be as quick to anger. Or, yeah, you know, I could be more on time. And so there's always something. So I think it's really just introducing that element that you play a part in this too, and we have to look at that.
So taking responsibility for how our actions and thoughts and behaviors are contributing to the problem that we are complaining about, essentially.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
So I loved how your very first tip in the book was fast food communication. So what is fast food communication?
So a lot of the problems that I see were really based on misunderstandings and miscommunication. And so I created this rule to ensure better communication. And if you think about it, if you go to a fast food drive-in and you state your order, afterward, the employee repeats it back to you and it's even shown on the screen. And so there's a lot of accuracy, right? Let me make sure that I heard you correctly. Let me actually do it in a double capacity to make absolute sure. And so I want us to do that with our partners. And so it's really simple. Our partner comes to us and says something and we repeat back. What I'm hearing you say is, and we repeat back. And so this really does two things. It ensures accuracy. Let me make sure I heard you, but it immediately validates our partner, right? It's like, because I think we're very quick to defend and our partner comes to us with something, you know, like, I'm upset that you were late. I was late because, and we immediately kind of pounce back. But if we take that pause of what I'm hearing you say is that you were upset that I'm late, it just slows everything down. Everybody's defenses are lower. The partner feels validated. Oh yeah, they heard what I said. And so I really like this in that it just forces us to connect and hear each other in a less defensive manner.
And then when the fast food cashier repeats your order back and they get it wrong, then you have an opportunity to correct it. No, I didn't say two cheeseburgers, I said one cheeseburger. I didn't say I was angry. I said I was frustrated.
Exactly. You got it. That's exactly right. Yeah. But you'd be surprised how many times like, no, that's not what I meant. Or, you know, or maybe they said it once they heard it back. It's like, oh, no. Actually, I kind of meant it this way. So yeah, it really does provide that reassurance that everybody's on the same page.
So if I say, I'm just being a little facetious here. If I say, I think you're being a jerk, you should say, you think I'm being a jerk.
What I'm hearing you say is, you think I'm being a jerk, right? I mean, it's hard, but it, you know, it immediately, that validation is so key. And that partner will calm down because they instantly feel heard. And they're, you know, they're recognizing, okay, my partner's listening to me. You know, they might not like what I said, but they are listening to me and my concern is valid. They might not agree, but it's valid. It's important.
And then you get to switch.
Yeah, exactly. And then they get their turn. It's true, right? Yes.
It is interesting that you started out that response by saying a lot of problems are based on misunderstanding and miscommunication. Mm-hmm. And, you know, particularly for partners that have been together for a long period of time, you think they understand how each person uses words and is trying to say, but why is there still misunderstanding and miscommunication happening?
We are coming from two completely different brains, right? We are wired so differently. And so I think that the way we see things, our partner just doesn't, right? We have different perspectives. And so I think sometimes things become so clear to us, but it's not for our partner. We're just viewing it at different angles. And that's why I always say to partners, I'd rather you be inquisitive than assume things from our partners, right? So, you know, we may just kind of check in like, gosh, you know, I'm starting to to feel like maybe you're upset with me about this. Is that right? You know, rather than, oh my God, you're always upset with me. And the partner's like, no, I wasn't upset. I was just more, you know, confused or, you know, whatever it is. So I'm a big proponent of asking each other questions, of sort of checking in, like, hey, am I understanding this right? Or like, gosh, you know, from my perspective, I'm wondering if it's, you know, if I'm getting this wrong, you know, just sort of that, you know, magnum PI, gosh, I'm dating myself, but just that kind of like detective sort of way rather than that assumptions, right? And you know what assumptions stand for? Assuming, what is it? Like making an ass out of you and me, something like that. Yeah. So it's like, right? So we don't want to assume. We just want to check in with that. And this is the other thing I talk about in Love Hacks is assuming positive intentions, right? So assuming our partner, you know, does want the best for us. They want this relationship. And so they're not just being a jerk on purpose. Maybe there's something else. So let's assume our partner is operating kindly, right? Or with their best intentions rather than assuming the opposite, the worst.
So you're allowed one assumption.
per relationship. Right. Per time period of a relationship.
You get one assumption, right. Good intentions.
Yeah, exactly.
That you're
exactly.
Both are good people. You want the other one to be happy.
That's true.
And that is the for good everything example. Else, be curious, be inquisitive, try to enter your partner's world.
Yes. Yep. You did that fast food communication beautifully.
Oh, that's true. That is kind of what I do on the show. That's wonderful. So let's move on to this idea of anger, because I might be tempted to communicate my anger. And yet you write in your chapter on anger about the importance of letting go of it. So what role does anger play either in connection or disconnection in our relationships?
Unfortunately, it plays a big role. It really does. And, you know, there's resentments that can creep up if we're feeling really resentful toward our partner. So yeah, I mean, I'm a big proponent that the only way out is through. So we have to look at that anger. And you're right. It can disconnect us a lot. It can really disconnect us. So to me, you know, one thing that I created in Love Hacks is an acronym called SHADE. So we think of anger as kind of this primary emotion, but it's actually a secondary emotion. So let's look at what's behind that anger. And so SHADE stands for sadness. So that first one is the S, it's sadness. You know, what am I sad about? H is hurt. Am I hurt by something? Can I tell my partner what I'm hurt about? The A is afraid, right? What am I scared of? What am I fearful of? The D is disappointment. Have I been disappointed by my partner and something that I wanted them to do that they didn't? And then the E is embarrassment, right? And so, you know, embarrassment is such a vulnerable feeling. And so sometimes it's easier to be angry than kind of really check in and feel that shame and embarrassment. So I really want couples to kind of go deeper and what am I really angry about and what's underneath it all? And I think that can help connect couples. And then obviously I talk a lot about what you said at the beginning of letting go of that anger. It's so important. I mean, we want to hold on to it because it feels powerful. We feel in control. If we're angry, we are in control of that illusion. But it's so important to let it go and do a lot of rituals to achieve that. And I talk a lot about that in the book of kind of writing anger letters to our partner, not sending it, but just getting it out or doing a forgiveness meditation. If you're open to that, I mean, I provide so many tools because what works for one may not work for another, or at a moment one might work and you have to flip to another tool. So I provide a lot of examples in the book.
So that's so interesting to hear that anger is a secondary emotion, because I feel like we're often taught that there's like four or five primary universal emotions: mad, glad, sad, scared, and disgust. But would you say that that's not true? And that actually,
right? This is just my own personal opinion. Yeah, I was going to say people might disagree. I just think there's usually something deeper underneath it, right? And so that's where that important piece is going to be, because where are we going to move from there? If we're just angry, we can't quite get anywhere. But if somebody gets vulnerable and says, hey, I'm really hurt, you did that. Okay, we can work with that, right? Our partner suddenly feels compassion. And so that's why it's helpful for me to look at that and why I teach couples to look at it that same way.
Yeah, I love this idea of looking underneath the anger, seeing if there's any shade.
Yes, exactly. Like,
sadness, hurt, afraid, disappointment, and embarrassment. And would you say that our anger can be kind of like a mixture of these things? Or is there often one underlying challenging emotion?
No, I think you're right. It can be a mixture. And so I think it's really figuring out which one is the most prominent. Which one are you feeling the deepest? And we can start there. We don't want to overwhelm our partners. Like, all right, let me write down, you know, here's all of the feelings. It's like, all right, we'll start with one or two and then go from there.
What are some of the most common things you find relationships getting angry about?
Oh God, where do I start? How long is this show? Yeah. I mean, gosh, you know, it's funny. Like, yeah, when I think about like resentments that creep up, I mean, it's, you know, it can be as big as something like there's infidelity, right? That's just not quite healed and fixed. But it really, chores is a big one. I think couples can feel very frustrated if they're doing more physical labor, you know, in their relationship. So, you know, my anecdote to that is like creating structure around chores and creating a chore chart so that everybody's doing their part and nobody feels that doesn't feel resentful. Everybody knows where they stand in this relationship and what's needed to be done in the household and things like that. But yeah, those are kind of the big ones. Although, I mean, believe me, there's anger to be had in every situation. You know, I'm not the priority anymore, which can happen, right? When we're first dating, we make each other the priority, and then suddenly, you know, life happens and job becomes important and kids become more important and things like that. And we kind of lose sight of the relationship with our partner. So we have to come back to that as well.
Yeah, it's so interesting that you brought up this idea of infidelity, because one of the issues in your book is we can't trust each other after infidelity. So when I opened it, I had to jump to it because I think for most people, infidelity is like the world's biggest deal breaker. And it usually means the end of the relationship. Well, you cheated. Once a cheater, always a cheater. Can't trust you. Relationship is over. And yet you write, if processed properly, it, meaning infidelity, can also be one of the most clarifying experiences for a relationship. So I'd love to hear more from you about why infidelity doesn't necessarily mean the relationship is over and what it means to process it properly.
Yes. So I love that you pointed this out. So I'm not condoning infidelity at all. I mean, I just think that if it does happen, I think you're exactly right. I think most people think, okay, that's it. You know, if my partner does this, it's the end, it's over. But I think if we can take that opportunity to examine why it happened, if we really look into it and talk about it and get honest with each other, then you might have a better relationship after this, a stronger relationship, a more honest one. And so I think that sometimes infidelity forces us to have those very difficult conversations, right? So maybe the partner didn't want to talk about how, you know, something's not working quite right, and it's easier to seek something else than have those really difficult conversations. And then, you know, something like this forces you to have those conversations, and you need to go there. And so you ask those difficult questions, you talk about it, you get vulnerable, and you can feel closer. I mean, I've seen it so many times in my practice.
So let's say I'm a bit skeptical.
Uh-huh. Or, fair enough. I get it.
Maybe let's just say it was recently revealed in my relationship, and I think things are, I'm angry.
Yeah.
What are some of the first steps towards healing?
Sure. And that's totally understandable and natural, right? This is a complete process. It will take so much time. And it's not just like, okay, there was infidelity and great, our relationship's back on track. I mean, it takes a lot of time and a lot of work. And that's why I said process properly. I mean, there's a lot to be done. I think the first step is really that partner taking accountability and expressing remorse, right? Those are the first two really important steps in helping this relationship, right? You know, I shouldn't have done what I did, and I am so incredibly sorry. And then it's, you know, acknowledging the harm. It's saying, you know, I've recognized what this has done to our relationship, and then it's committing to change. And I will not do this again. Like that, you know, I've learned from this, and I'm not going to do that. And then the final piece is requesting forgiveness. Now, again, I didn't say, you know, demanding, it's requesting, and it's up to the partner at when they are ready to forgive, if they want to forgive. But I think those five steps are key and helping. And again, those first two are the biggies: accountability and remorse, and then also acknowledging the harm.
I feel like this very much goes back to the piece we talked about earlier around taking personal responsibility for the dynamics that happen in relationships, particularly because the person who maybe I'll just call him the cheater.
Yeah, the unfaithful partner.
Sounds a lot better. The unfaithful partner might be like, well, you know, if you weren't so cold, if you didn't work so much, I wouldn't have been driven to such a thing. And it can be easy to blame the other person. But that first step of taking accountability seems so crucial.
You're right. And it is true that the other partner could have played a part 100%, but it's that first piece is, okay, I'm going to own this now. There's going to be time to talk about the other person's part and what wasn't working in the relationship. But that first key part is recognizing our own parts of this. Okay, what did I do? Okay, yes, I'm gonna take accountability. And then later, when things calm down, we get into that. Because that's key too, right? So if your example you gave, if the other partner's working, okay, let's talk about it, right? So I didn't feel like a priority. Now what I did wasn't right, but just so you know, can we spend more time together? Can we devise a plan for date nights? You know, things we talked about earlier. So I think it is important to address those issues of what led this person to stray, but not immediately.
So you mentioned 5 steps. I have 4 right now. Taking accountability, expressing remorse, acknowledging harm, requesting forgiveness.
You forgot committing to change.
Committing
to change, right? So I'm not going to, because you know, that partner needs to feel safe, right? The partner needs to know, okay, this isn't going to happen again. And that my partner's aware of what he did and how he's not going to do that going forward.
I love those 5 steps. And that's for the unfaithful partner.
Correct.
And what about the faithful partner? Do they have steps to take?
Yes, they do too. And, you know, like I said, the first thing is, you know, it's okay for that person to take some time, right? Something traumatic just happened. So, you know, the first thing I would say is just allowing that person to take some time. You know, I think we're so quick to, I mean, the unfaithful partner might feel so bad and be like, okay, come on, we got to work this out. And it's like recognizing, okay, I need to be patient with my partner. They just uncovered something really big here. And then, yeah, I think it's understanding that they don't necessarily need to forgive right away. It might take some time. And then they need to work through their anger around it. And we talked a lot about those anger rituals that can help, you know, writing the anger letter, expressing it to your partner, talking about your frustrations, right? Really giving space to the faithful partner to have that opportunity to say, I'm really hurt. I'm really angry. I'm scared. And then I think it's allowing that partner, the faithful partner, to ask questions to the unfaithful partner and really hard questions, you know, like, was something not great with our relationship? You know, what were you getting from this other person that we don't have? And these are hard questions, but they're important to look at the relationship. And I think it's an opportunity to learn, okay, so this person maybe got this from, you know, that other person. Can we experience some of that? So I have a list of hard questions that the faithful partner can ask the unfaithful partner, and that can help their relationship going forward because they can have a stronger, more cohesive relationship.
That does sound like a hard question to ask.
Very tough. It's really hard. And they don't want to hear the answers, but it's there, right? There's a reason that this all happens. So we do need to look at it.
Yeah, that's something I've been learning in my own therapy school, that one of my professors said, all behavior makes sense in context.
Yes.
And you can apply that to so many things, like, you know, a child acting out, like suddenly, chances are something happened in the relationship to somebody, say, committing crimes. Like, their behavior makes sense in the context that they grew up in. And so too, what I'm hearing from you is that the behavior we have in relationships makes sense when we do look at the larger context and dynamics that are happening in relationship.
You're 100% right on. I agree with that wholeheartedly. I like that.
And I do love this 5-step process that we're giving the unfaithful partner, because it is easy to be like a bit of an idealist that all infidelity can be healed from. It's actually like, no, if you don't take those steps, there's no healing. There's no growing to be done.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I just want to say, I mean, for those of you who are listening, like, I really have seen couples who've come in and it is like they are on the brink of divorce. They are ready. There's been infidelity. And then we have really done the work and they are stronger for it. I mean, and I would have never thought that before being a couples therapist. I kind of went in that notion like, nope, just can't happen. But I mean, it's amazing the growth that can happen if both people are willing and they're patient.
And there is a huge gender stereotype, I feel like, around cheating, that men tend to be the philanderers. Are there any stats on who has greater propensity to cheat, or at least in your experience, is there a...
That's a really great question.
30, 70, 50, 50.
All right. Well, what's so funny is I feel like we'll never really know because a lot of people don't own up to the cheating, right? So I am curious, right? And maybe it's, you know, maybe one job gender is like a little more sloppy than the other, right? Maybe you
oh, know what yeah. I mean? So, wait, one gender is just better at keeping it hidden.
Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, we don't know. So, I mean, I'm inclined to say it's 50-50, but I don't know for sure. I mean, I think in my work, it does tend to be a little bit more males are the unfaithful partner. But, you know, that's not a real study. But I have seen that.
So while it doesn't justify, nothing justifies infidelity, but one of particular contexts that might increase the propensity of a person to cheat is that the relationship has no sex. It's a dead bedroom.
Yes.
And the person does seek outside the relationship for that sense of newness and novelty and adventure. So in your experience, first of all, what does cause the frequency and even intimacy of sex to ebb in relationships?
I think it's very natural and normal for it to ebb and flow. So it's the first thing I want to say, right? I mean, we're not going to be consistent all the time, especially if you're in a long-term relationship and you have stress and things like that. So it's very normal. I think where it becomes problematic if one person isn't happy with the frequency anymore, right? So like I have couples that don't have sex and they're both happy and like, okay, you know, they're okay. We're not going to force this if they're both content, you know, versus other couples who come in and they're like, yeah, I'm just not happy. So I think that, you know, there's a lot of reasons why sex diminishes. You know, one thing we spoke about is that resentment. So on an emotional level, I think if you feel resentful toward your partner, it's just going to kill libido. So that's one of the first things I attack is really, you know, what is the resentment here? Because we have to talk about it in order for you to feel closer connected to your partner. Then I think it's, yeah, I mean, over time, of course, things aren't going to be as exciting. So that's why you do need to add some of those elements of excitement back in, which we talked about, those adrenaline activities. And I think that the third thing is like, if you haven't had sex for a while, it becomes very overwhelming to suddenly jump back in. So one thing I talk about in Love Hacks is sensate focus therapy. And it's a type of therapy where you are not focusing on sex or orgasm, but you're actually focusing on sensation and touch. And it's a beautiful connection where it's not about the outcome. It's really about kind of the present moment and getting connected with your partner. And so it's a beautiful way to kind of tap back into that without feeling overwhelmed. Like I have a lot of partners who are kind of scared to jump back in, or they've had sexual trauma or whatever the case may be. And so it's a really nice way to ease back in. And it's a five-step process, and it's just very slow, and it's really beautiful. So I highly recommend that.
So when you say you do sensate focus therapy, is this homework that you're assigning
yes.
for them in the
yeah,
bedroom?
Yeah, I'm not there in the room.
Like your gut, you're like, okay, now flick his ear.
Exactly right. No. Exactly. Although I'm sure there are therapists that do that, but now this is like on their own. And then we process it. What was it like, and what came up for you, and you know, what were the feelings, and were you scared? You know, all of that. So we process it.
Yeah, it's so interesting to hear you say that resentment kills libido. And you just used the word processing, and that's a big theme I'm hearing from you, is the importance of processing the more challenging emotions, and that we can't usually get to the next step of, say, physical intimacy until we deal with the, I don't know, hard stuff.
Yes. Oh, of course. Of course. But I think that's the funny part is like couples keep hiding their head in the sand. And I'm like, oh my God, it can be so much better. We have to work through it. And so it's just knowing, yes, you're going to have some discomfort, but it's going to pay dividends if you work through it. You're going to feel closer connected. You're going to have a better sex life. You're going to have a better relationship. And so it's putting in that work and knowing it's going to be better for everybody involved.
I can imagine if a couple is not processing those emotions or even sharing what's going on with them, right, that they can experience this feeling of growing apart. And I am curious if you find a lot of that has just happened where it's like nothing wrong with the relationship, you know, there's no infidelity, there's no abuse, but two people feel like strangers in their own home.
Oh yeah, for sure. And they start operating like roommates, and that's really sad and hard. And so we have to get out of that, right? And it almost becomes comfortable and familiar and too scary to make the changes. But yeah, you know, and one thing I always tell couples is like, I remind them, you know, why did you fall in love in the first place? And, you know, and they kind of sit there and or I say, you know, tell me when you first met. And it's so interesting. They both kind of light up and they'll say to me, oh, you know, I loved this about them, or, oh my gosh, yeah, it was so great. And so it's kind of coming back to that of, you know, you know, sometimes, sure, you start out in a friendship, but ultimately, you know, you are in a romantic partnership. So let's talk more about that and get back to that place rather than this kind of familiarity roommate situation. And so I have them write love letters to each other, which is a really great exercise, and talk about how they first met and what the feelings came up for that, and just sort of, you know, rekindles those old feelings that they once had.
So I have a title for your next book. From Roommates to Soulmates.
I love that. Ooh, I like that a lot. That's great.
Or I guess returning back to soulmates after you feel like you're roommates. So I love that. I'd love to hear more, yeah, about how we make that transition. I love this idea of love letters to each other,
yeah,
of reminiscing of the times when you were more in love with each other. And even earlier you mentioned like the fun novel adrenaline
activities.
What are some other tips, hacks, you might say,
sure,
to rekindle connection?
Gosh, we've talked about so many. You know, one of my favorite things, I think my favorite hack in love hacks is what I call quick partner connections. So I think there's this idea that, wow, we need to put in a lot of effort with our partners. And I'm like, no, they can be very small and sweet and quick. And so I love acronyms. So I term this one TEASE for the quick partner connections. And the first one is traditions. Can you create a quick tradition with your partner that just you two have, right? Is it, you know, in the mornings you tell each other, you know, five things you're grateful for? Is it just a kiss goodbye that you do every morning? E is for efforts, right? What can we do for our partner without telling them? That's, you know, can you just get them a cup of coffee and put it on their desk? Can you scrape the ice off the car if you live in a, you know, cold environment and it's cold outside? You know, those type of little efforts. A is acknowledgement, right? Can we tell our partner things that we like about them? It doesn't have to be verbal. You can write a note, something where we acknowledge and we see them. S is for silly. I think that we get so serious in our relationships and we need to come back to that silliness, right? So can you, you know, your partner comes back from work, can you talk in a foreign accent? Throw them off, right? Can you just enter the room with a pig nose, you know, like just make it fun again and, you know, and laughable. Or if that's not your style, go to a comedy club, right? Bring back some of that. And then E is for erotic. And, you know, sex doesn't start in the bedroom. It starts beforehand. So can you send your partner a steamy text? Or, you know, or maybe that's not your thing, but maybe you want to write, you know, send a love poem, you know, things like that. So quick partner connections is one of my absolute favorites.
I love that.
Thank you.
Okay, folks, it's time to tease your partner.
Yes, exactly.
Everyone loves a good tease.
I mean, who doesn't, right?
Exactly. Traditions, effort. Acknowledgement, silly, and erotic.
You got it.
Good hack. It's like a code, like the password to unlock the something.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Uh oh, now you know my computer passwords. Yeah.
Wonderful. It's been such a joy talking with you, Kelly, about your new book, Love Hacks, Simple Solutions to Your Most Common Relationship Issues. And I do have to finish by asking you the question I ask all of my guests, which is, what do you wish everyone knew about love?
Oh, I love that so much. Love is my favorite word. You know, if you think about it, love has four letters and so does hate, right? So it's all about how we reframe things and look at things. And same with cry has three and joy has three. And so it's like, okay, you know, if we can look at our partnerships the same way and reframe. And so to me, love is all about that reframe and everybody deserves it. Everybody wants to feel special and feel loved. And so if we can create more of that, the world is just a better place.
Reframe your world, everyone, from hate to love, from cry to joy.
Exactly.
Beautiful. Thank you, Kelly Miller, for coming on to the show. For our listeners who want to learn more about you, how can they find you?
Yes. So you can find me on my website at Kelly Miller Therapy, and it's Kelly with an I. My Instagram is Kelly Miller Therapy as well. Same with my Facebook page. Yeah, all of those. And then my book, Love Hacks, Simple Solutions to Your Most Common Relationship Issues, can be found online, on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any place where books are sold. And thank you so much for having me.
Wonderful. Well, I'm so grateful to have had you on, and you're just a fountain of wisdom. And I'm sure all your clients and couples are lucky to have you too. Thank you so much for sharing what is also my favorite word, love.
Oh, I love it.
Because that's why we're here, to better love each other. And I appreciate you helping others better love themselves and others as well. So thank you so much, Kelly.
Thank you so much. I love your energy and spirit. It's beautiful. Thank you.
Wow, what an incredible interview. I'm so grateful for Kelly Miller for coming onto the show. And I'm grateful for you listeners for listening to the show. I hope you remember all of the valuable lessons that Kelly shared with us today, including technology can get in the way of true connection. So put down your phones and turn toward your partner. We can only change ourselves. Good thing, positive behavior begets positive behavior. It is much better to be inquisitive than it is to assume things. And underneath anger, you might find shade, sadness, hurt, afraid, disappointment, and embarrassment. And believe it or not, infidelity doesn't necessarily mean the end of a relationship if the unfaithful partner is willing to take accountability, express remorse, acknowledge harm, request forgiveness, and commit to change. Remember, emotions have to be processed. Resentment kills libido. And don't forget to tease your partner. Implement traditions. Make an effort to connect. Acknowledge, validate, and appreciate each other. Bring silliness to your relationship and erotic being. Thanks again for listening. I hope you also remember you are perfect just the way you are. You are lovable, loving, and loved.
Thanks again for listening to the Learn to Love podcast. To learn more about the show and your host, head over to zachbeach.com or theheartcenter.com. You can also follow Zach on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.